come on, we're on an ironing board and theater somewhere in Brooklyn.
This is how it gets done.
It is how
it, gets done. You just do it.
It is how it gets done. And I think people, they have in their mind arriving or it or being there.
Yeah.
And it's never,
never.
You're never there.
No.
You're never there. Anyways, we'll get into that. Hey everybody, my name is Norm Lavalette, as you may know, and this is Beyond the Norm, where we talk all things comedy and improv and business thereof. I have a guest that is not only a friend of mine, but somebody that I look up to so much in the entertainment business. I think that he has been an example of how you get shit done in a business where doing everything right doesn't mean it'll ever work out for you, which is the case, but you still have to do the work. So I'm going to skip some of the other things because I just want to get right into talking with my friend and former Improv Asylum main stage actor, Ryan Gall.
Hi, Norm. Hi.
Hi, Ryan. Hi. I'm glad that didn't come off so
wooden and stiff.
That's why you're so successful.
Yeah, this is how I've done it.
So to paint the picture at the moment, we are in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
And we are in the, what is this? The Brick?
The Brick Theater? Or in Brick Production?
Yeah, it's like a...
It's got a lot going on.
It's got a ton. It's got a TV studio. It's got
a wall of sandwiches. There was a wall of sandwiches.
I didn't see
there.
The wall of sandwiches.
Well, I mean, I assume it was lunch for...
Oh, a lunch counter? Did you confuse the lunch counter for a wall of an art installation?
So what are we talking
about? Hey, we're talking about... We jumped in earlier, but we're talking about the business end of comedy. So why don't you give the quick version of kind of how you started from out of college and Improv Asylum to, you know, what you're doing in LA?
Yeah, I think my story is probably similar to other people who have talked to you, but, you know, did some theater in college. Mm-hmm.
Which at Stonehill?
Stonehill College, Northeastern Mass, shout out. And I did mostly pretty weird drama, like things nobody would know, like Holy Ghosts. Like,
nope, I don't know.
Yeah, just weird drama where I was a horrible actor, way overacting. Every time I look at a video of it, I'm like pretty embarrassed. Got out of college, was nowhere in my mind did I ever think I'd have a career, you know, acting or writing. And got a job for WB Mason. Hated it to the point where I wanted to pretty literally kill myself. Mm-hmm. And stumbled into a newborn theater in the north end of Boston, Improv Asylum. I think at the time, maybe you didn't even have a sign up.
Probably not. No. I mean, that's how new it was.
Yeah. No, it was, I walked down there and it was like walking through puddles to get to
And you were there too, like before, like it probably still had like Mount St. Helens School painted from Nonsense. Yeah. Is that what was playing? Yeah.
Yeah. So I saw a show there. I remember seeing Eddie Mejia and Amy Rader and you and Chet and Brian Freights and just being like, holy shit, that looks fun. Never had done improv in my life, but I was like, oh my God, I want to. I was like, that's what I do. That's all I can do. I knew in my mind, I was like, I could do that. I would watch structures. By the way, I saw it once and then I was like, I'm coming back every weekend for like a month.
Yeah, you and your brother used to come
all the time.
Right?
Yeah. I went up to you guys after a show and I was like, do you have classes? You have to have classes. I think Chet sent me away being like, listen, we'll call you. You got to stop asking.
Hey, man.
Buddy, we love you, but you got to get out of our face.
We literally just opened the doors. We don't know what we're doing, man.
I can remember I lived in Beacon Hill. I remember the night I got a call and I was told there was a class that was going to be offered. It was one class. That was the training center at that point. It was one class. And I was like, yeah. By the way, I didn't have a pot to piss in.
Sure.
I didn't have a dime. I scraped together money.
But you figured it out. And so like
never a question.
And a lot of the things that we talk about and I talk about the same way. Like I think back to when we opened the theater.
Mm-hmm.
To this day, I don't know how I did it.
Yeah.
Because I was living in a pantry. I had no money.
No.
My car was repossessed. I remember my car was repossessed. I remember feeling like such an asshole. I'm like, am I really?
Yeah.
Is that who I am?
Yeah.
And I remember just somehow scraping enough money to like to take a bus to Somerville to walk to the collection agent. So, and yet you figure it out somehow. You know?
Yeah. When I got that call, I wasn't worried about like, I should budget this out.
No, you figure it out.
No, I was like, yes, sign me up. I will find a way.
And so you took classes. So to speed it along, because I want to get, we had this similar conversation with Matt Canzano.
Okay. Yeah.
And we found that like we spent so much long talking about the phone. Also was like, and now I'm in LA. Goodbye.
Yeah.
I was like, damn, I bet you people want to hear about that. So you took classes and then you were in the, you were with what became the very first grad show, Gary's Pocket.
Right.
Right. But then we had auditions.
You had auditions like a couple of weeks before my grad show.
Yeah.
And I was like, damn it. I like put together my best pair of khakis, and which I think had holes in them, and like a polo tucked in. And I was like, I remember putting thought into like, I need to present myself in a way where that won't work against me. I didn't care if I looked the best. I was like, they're not going to be able to use the fact that I don't look good to be like, he doesn't have the right look. So I was like, at least I'll try to be handsome if I'm not funny. But no, I remember Brian Gallivan and I both got offered spots. I think I got offered a spot and Brian came, which was a mistake on your part, by the way. He should have gone way before me.
Brian, if you want to do a podcast of all of my mistakes in the last 20 years, there's that's a series. That's not even a podcast. My mistakes.
Yeah.
But yeah, Gallivan came. He came on a little bit after you.
Yeah. I was scared shitless.
Well, and the thing is, you were down in Florida, right? When you got the call?
Yeah. And I had had I just had gotten to a point where I was like, I'm going to do this. I was waiting tables, and when people would ask me what I do for a living, because I clearly wasn't going to be like, I'm a career waiter, I would tell them I was an actor. And when they said like, oh, what have you done? I would make up names of movies that didn't exist. Could be like, oh, I was working on a lot of independent movies. And
I used to do the same thing when I was starting in comedy in Boston. I was a real estate rental agent, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I did. And it was great because it allowed me to do comedy and stand up. And people would always ask me, what do you do? I'm like, I'm a comedian.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, where can I see you? I'm like, oh, not really anywhere. But you know, Dick Doherty's vault for 5 minutes once a month.
Yeah.
But from a mindset standpoint, when you self-identify as this is who I am and you lead with that, I always felt like I needed to do that so I could keep telling myself this is who I wanted to be.
I was convincing myself for sure. But yeah, so I stayed at Improv Asylum for, God, till 2003, 2004 maybe?
Yeah, right around. You were there for a good 4 years.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you went through all of that and you became – you know, one of the funniest people that was ever there and that's ever come out of there. And I always, you know, reference you in that when people ask, well, how do you make it? Right. As if there's like, I know, or anybody else knows, nobody knows.
No.
And the commonality though, that I always talk about is working incredibly hard and doing it, like just throwing yourself into it doesn't mean you're going to make it. But everyone that I've seen, quote unquote, and I'm using the air quotes now, who have made it have been the hardest workers.
Right. You have to be – you have to be willing to do more than other people. Yeah, even if you're going to fail. For example, I remember going down to New York and being like, well, what do actors do that get work? You have to get an agent. You have to join the union. Those were the two things that I was always told. So I was like, well, I'm joining the union. I didn't even have the money, or there was no work no union work in Boston, or very rare.
And they don't need you. The union and the industry doesn't need you.
No, they could care less. I went and signed. It was like this big heroic moment in my life. And they were like, just sign here. Okay, it's $2,200. Get out. You're part of the union. Get ready to pay dues whether you work or not. I was like, okay, that's great. I'm SAG. At that time, I think it was AFTRA, which like was sad. But joined, went down to New York, got a meeting with Don Buchwald and Associates.
Oh yeah, I remember that.
And they all sat around and they were like, "So you're moving to New York?" And I was like, "Nope." And they were like, "I do shows in Boston." They were like, "Well, we would be sending you out every day on commercial auditions." And I was like, "Yep." I was like, "Try me." And they were like, you're going to come down in the morning and go to commercial auditions, which you have pretty much no chance of booking because you're not a regular in the town, and then go back and do shows. And I was like, hell yeah. What else am I doing? Like, and if I have some time to work out, I'll do it. So I did it. And I remember getting up at 4 a.m. I would drive to New Haven, get on the train, make it in for like a 10:30 audition for Bud Light, get back on the train, come back, rehearse, mm-hmm. and put up a show that night, and then getting no response.
Nothing.
From, I got a couple of callbacks, one of which I was too late for and missed. And I remember mm-hmm. I had to go in the room, and they were like, I was like, oh my God, I came all the way from Boston. Can I please do it? And they were like, yeah, sure. Come on in the room. I went in the room. There was like a wall of people that never stopped talking as I read the line. And then the director, I remember, just looked up and was like, thanks. And I was like, what am I doing? So I questioned it all the time. I was
Absolutely.
Like, what am I doing? I would tear up on the train home.
Well, you question it at each stage, right? And like, what am I doing? And even when you find success, I always find that the feeling is so short lived.
Yeah.
Because you're like, great, the audience loves me. And then you're like, now what else am I, you know, yeah. what else is there? And but again, you were showing that behavior that I always talk about, which is if you want to do more, you can.
Right.
And I always say this coming from a place of, and I know right now I'm probably doing about 50%
yeah.
of what I really could be doing. Right? Like you always can work harder. And when you start working harder, you just start surpassing people.
Yeah.
You know?
It doesn't, I think the older I get and the more I'm starting to do, I'm realizing the work, you don't know what you're doing. But if you work hard and you just push and you push every wall, you push every door, you won't get response. You won't get a response necessarily that day or that year. Or there's things I think I did back at Improv Asylum that literally are helping me tomorrow. You know, that
sure.
that work is paying off tomorrow. And an example is going to Don Buchwald and meeting with them and never booking a thing. And for a year, I went back and forth from New York. People thought I was crazy. But when I went to L.A., Michael Raymond from Don Buchwald, I called him and I was like, listen, I'm going to L.A. And he was like, Don Buchwald doesn't do commercials in L.A., sorry. And he goes, but I'll give you the name of this one guy, Mike Abrams at AKA Talent. I called Mike and he was like, sure, come in and meet. And I remember meeting with him. I wore a leather blazer, by the way, which they immediately made fun of. And they were like, you ain't in New York anymore, bud.
You are edgy.
Get the jams out. You're in Cali. And he was like, all right. I remember him saying, do you have any questions for me? And I go to Mike Abrams. I had no reason to say this, but I was like, why do you guys think you should be able to represent me? And he just looked at me and smiled. And he was like, well, I don't know if we do. And then he called me a week later and was like, we're going to take a chance. Let's see what we can get. And then...
What a great, like, you know, you're like, all right, I'm doing the reverse power
yeah.
play. I'm going to have him.
Yeah.
Why do you, like, and what a
no.
great, like,
he was like,
knock you
I
right back
know.
Down.
I don't know, Ryan. But yeah. he did. And that was great. That was a great, like, I immediately started booking commercials in California. I don't know what the difference in my attitude was, but I think I had to.
Well, but it also came from the fact, right, as you said, everything builds on everything else, much like working out. And by the time you were now going out for more commercials in LA, you also now had 4 years of performing on stage,
yeah.
getting that experience in New York.
Right.
So you were starting from a very different place
yes.
When you were in LA than you were even when you were down in New York.
Yes.
You know, and so you were there, and I'd love to talk a little bit about, so you're a groundling.
Yes.
Right? And I'd love to talk about that process because it strikes me, and not knowing, you know, never having gone through any of that, the onus that the groundling process puts on the individual to create for themselves
mm-hmm.
and do the work, it seems like no other theater in this genre of work that I know of.
Yeah. I think they create, I mean, they, you know, the broad strokes are always, you know, the groundlings is a character-based comedy theater. So if you go there, you're going to watch character-based sketches where actors have written these pieces for themselves, where it's usually a fish out of water,
right?
Almost always. There's some, you know, bits and more epic pieces that are showy, but that's kind of the bread and butter of the Groundlings. So yeah, they teach a pretty selfish way of writing. I mean, if you look at Melissa McCarthy's,
sure,
all her movies, they're based around this big,
I don't think,
broad,
and I don't
character.
Think I don't think that process, and I don't think selfish as you use it, it should be thought of as a pejorative.
No, not at all.
Because I have large opinions about the,
yes,
improvisational world that a lot of people, you know, pisses people off. I don't give a shit, you know,
no.
That's the way it goes. But one of the things is, I think you learn, first and foremost, you learn that ensemble-based generosity with your cast members, usually in those first improvisational groups, theaters,
yep,
whatever. At some point, though, you do have to learn, if your goal is to do this professionally and to do this commercially, to create for yourself.
Yeah.
And so when you say, you know, you learn a selfish process, you know, from the Groundlings, I think that's really good. Because
right,
usually when you get to that level, you know the other stuff. You know the group mind. You know how to,
yeah,
yes and, you know, which is a completely...
But a lot of people don't. And that's where I value the road I came on through Improv Asylum, because Improv Asylum was different. You wrote for a group. People would write big monologues and cast somebody else,
yeah,
in the cast,
which they still do, and that's,
yeah,
and that's a very cool thing.
It's very cool. It's probably more in the vein of Second City.
Yes, and very much so,
where you're writing and you're focusing on the writing and not necessarily always the performance. But going to the Groundlings, people would like side eye me, and if I wrote a piece, I remember one of the first things I ever wrote, and it was a, you know, two guys in an office, and one had stolen the other guy's Thin Mints. It was a very, like, it's a hilarious piece.
It sounds
super
fun.
You know, it built up and turned into this crazy situation where guns were pulled and accusations were made. And I remember getting notes from Jim Rash after that, and he was like, "What? Why did you write? You wrote the funnier lines for the other guy in the sketch." And I was like, "Yeah, and what are you?" It's the sketch. I'm worried about the sketch as a whole. And he was like, "You need to stop that right now. You need to stop that right now." And it's there. I mean, I've learned that I can still do that. And I think that's one of the things I love about writing, is not just making myself into a wacky character. I love making other characters pop in a sketch. I think that's something that I didn't have to forget. And I think it's an important part of if I'm trying to write a screenplay or a pilot, you have to be able to write for everyone.
And that's where I mean, and then there's the other side of it, which is the selfish side of it, which is you have the skill sets to do both, right? And you have the skill set now to take care of things that you want to do for yourself and then larger pieces. The argument that I always make, especially in the improv comedy world, is people need to learn how to do things by themselves.
Yeah.
Like it's great that you can do it as an ensemble. And again, this is going back to, if you want to do this professionally, whatever, I always say it. Well, when you get into the room to audition for SNL, you're not with your friends.
You're on your own. Yeah.
And that's not the place you want to be the very first time you're doing it for yourself, by yourself.
Right.
So then the other thing with the Groundlings, though, is the effort that has to happen individually outside that theater, right?
Oh,
because I always remember, you know, talking to you, and you're always meeting up with different people that you're writing, mm-hmm, outside the theater. You're buying your props.
Yeah.
You're costuming it.
It was a full-time job, no doubt. I mean, I've spent thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars on props, let alone the classes. The classes aren't cheap.
Sure.
I think it's like $900 or something for the final class now.
Holy shitballs.
Yeah. Holy shitballs is right.
Note to self, charge more.
Yeah. No. And you see people that are just great, or you see people are like, "I can't afford it."
Sure.
And I go, I do think this and judge them in my mind. And I'm like, you will never do it then.
You could ask me.
You could ask anyone. You could go to the, I think I did go to the office and say, like, "I have to give you half now and half at the end of the class." And they were like, "All right."
Sure. And the other thing too is, whenever I hear "I can't afford it," and look, we're not saying anything that thousands of people haven't said before, but like, okay, are you still going out every weekend drinking?
Right.
Are you going out every weekend to dinner? I mean, like, if you want to, you can
afford it.
You can figure the shit out, you know? And I always go back to this idea of my philosophy is when somebody asks, like, how do I make it in this business? My question always back to them is, what's your pain tolerance?
Yeah.
Because that's going to determine how far and how long you want to go. What's your pain tolerance?
On every level.
Yeah.
On every level.
So you did, you know, and obviously you're still with the Groundlings and how that program works. And you found, you know, some, you know, really good success in television. You've done a lot of things. What are, I'll let you say your credits.
Let's go through every credit. Everyone. And I'll start. No. Currently, that's why I'm here in New York shooting The Last OG, season 2. Tracy Morgan, Tiffany Haddish. It's been a blast. You know, I do some, I'm on Superstore here and there.
Bajillion dollar listings.
Bajillion dollar properties.
Property,
Bajillion dollar listings is the real show. We spoofed it.
But is it
with
bajillion?
The short-lived bajillion. Bajillion dollar properties. You know, I think I'm, you know, I've done some movies. When people ask me that, they're like, what have you done? I usually talk about, you know, the Groundlings, because that's kind of what I'm most proud of. My performances at the Groundlings are where I've really, like, I've done the hardest stuff. I've done
and
the
it's
stuff
your
that's
largest
me.
Deepest body of work too, or, you know, ultimately what you've done there. Well, but as I, you know, moving into the television side of things, right? Because for the person just breaking in, or, you know, the civilian, you know, in their mind, the making it is but have you been on TV?
Yeah.
And it's such a different mindset, because they're like, well, okay, what is making it? And what are you trying to do? It, you know, because I own a theater and some theaters and businesses.
Right.
And it doesn't mean shit to anybody. And they're like, you know, but I do. I always say, like, I make a poop joke on a Bruins commercial standing at a urinal. And they're like, and they're you've like,
no
made
way.
It. I'm like, I didn't.
Yeah, people think, like, you know, even rapping. We rapped The Last OG season 2. And I'm walking away being like, oh, what's next? Well, I got to keep the fire burning. Got to go. And people who are like, oh, yeah, you're on a TV show, huh? Well, I guess you've made it and retire now. And it's like, no, you're always looking for something more.
Well, you told me a story. I remember, like, a year or two ago when we were hanging out. I forget, from House of Lies.
Oh, Josh Lawson or Ben Schwartz.
I think it might have been Ben Schwartz, but you were saying how, you know, he's got a great role and, you know, it's a really important, and he's great on that show and super funny. And you had relayed a conversation to me where he was like, yeah, man, I gotta, you know, I'm feeling pigeonholed. You know, like, like at every level, it's
totally,
you don't feel.
Yeah. I think I remember the conversation we had where he was like, I've only said something to me in a time where I hadn't booked something in, you know, months. And he was like, I don't know what I'm going to do. I've only, like, done 3 movies, sold 1 movie, and 3 TV shows in the last, like, 6 months. And it's just, like, a long, awkward silence. I'm like, I've had 4 commercial auditions and not booked any. You are complaining. But you realize.
And then you're falling down. I'm like, I have to do more moving bodies for corporate.
Yeah.
It's the knobs, you know.
But the people, I think that hunger is what drives success. If you don't have that, then you would just be like, well, my goal was to book 1 national commercial in my life. I did it. I'm going back to the corporate world and I'm going to work, you know, do something safer. And I think there's something that drives me about it not being safe. I need that motivation of, like, I don't know what's coming next. Now I'm going to start sniffing around. I'm going to reach out to people and be like, what are we doing? What season is it? Is it pilot season? I'm going to be bugging the shit out of my agents, being like, get me out on this. I just read this script. I want to go. And they'll say, no, you can't. You're not young enough. And I'll cry for a little bit and then say, what else? And say, can we make our own movie? Or to reach out to somebody and be like,
can I
we
get
make
work
a short?
Done? Can you can make me look younger?
Yeah. Or sometimes I'll just book a ticket to Boston, because I know as soon as I book a ticket home, an audition will come up where I'll book something almost every time.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it is that sense. Like, I'm driven the same way in a different area of the business. But, you know, people ask me, like, why are you opening a theater in New York? Why are you doing this stuff in China? I'm like, well, because isn't that why we're in the business? To try to Like, I don't know. What am I going to do? Just sit around and go like, well, I've got this place in Boston. I guess I can die now. Yeah. I mean,
and you could.
I guess.
But you, yeah. I think you get a, you like the thrill.
No doubt.
Of going after this. And it's mixed with the perfect amount of, well, fuck you. I don't care if I fail. I'll go harder at it next time.
Sure.
And that's, I feel like that's a recipe for, you know, that every, call it whatever you want, entrepreneur, a writer, actor, people who succeed, they have that mix of like, I'm not going to stop. You can say no as many times as you want.
And I'm not going to stop. And I'm not going to stop. And I'm really not going to listen to you tell me all the reasons why I'm doing it wrong. I won't succeed. I shouldn't do it. Like you yeah. I think that the great thing about coming up as a comedian, be it stand up or improv or whatever, if you find any amount of success with it, you start to really get the sense of like, I don't give a shit what you think, because everybody's going to tell you why you're wrong all the way up until you're not.
Until, yeah.
You know what I mean? And then also they're like, well, that was easy and that was obvious that was going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, like kind of like, you know, as you're saying, they look like, well, look at Ryan. He's, you know, he's going to show a Tracy Morgan. It's always worked out for him.
Yeah.
What a crock of shit.
Yeah. No, people, I mean,
you had to get interviewed.
Must be nice. Yeah. And then I look back to getting
interviewed by me in your first interview where we had.
Your ball was hanging out of your pants.
My ball was hanging out.
Your ball was literally hanging out of your ripped crotch khakis.
Yeah.
And you weren't hiding it. You had your legs spread like a.
As I remember it, this is a long time ago, in a different world for all of us, in a different world, we had, I think, been partying all night at the theater. I think I slept in the green room.
Yeah.
And I think I probably even forgot that there was interviews coming in.
Yeah.
And so that's why, you know, again, like you're coming in all, you know, you're,
oh, yeah.
your polo tucked in. And I can remember coming out, you know, backstage from the green room to the exact same location as now and being like, okay, who are we talking to? Yeah. Like, what's up?
And
like,
who is this, Ryan?
Who are you?
Yeah, you guys, God. Your questions were all like,
he's big. Why is he so big?
Hey, guys. But that was, that interview, by the way, came about a week after my first audition. And this is a perfect example of just being stupid enough to go for it and not care. I read in the newspaper, because at that time there were newspapers and I actually would I'd look in it for like jobs and stuff. Oh,
sure, that you had to look there.
And there was like an art section of jobs, and there Disney posted a audition, open notice, like open call at the Holiday Inn on Cambridge Street. And I was like, well, hell, this is my big break. I'm gonna work for Disney. I went to Barnes & Noble, bought a monologue for men, monologues for men, picked out something. I can only remember it was like a nun, a boy who was like talking to a nun. And it was supposed to be funny. I don't even remember. It was not funny at all. It might have been a dramatic one that I just put a funny.
This will be funny.
Yeah, this will be funny.
He's confessing to a nun.
I don't know. Yeah, it's back when you first act, you memorize the words and you don't even know what. You're like, it'll be funny. I don't have to worry about acting it. Waited in line for 2 hours. And when I got in, there was a long line of like, I guess Disney execs or people like behind this long table. And I went out ready to do my monologue. And the man at the piano said, do you have your sheet music? And I just said, no, I don't. I'm doing a monologue. And they were like, this is for dancers and singers for Disney. And I was like, and it's one of those moments where I just go, well, lean into this, Ryan. And I just said, well, I have a comedic monologue I'd like to do for you. And I don't have any music or any dancing. May I do my monologue? And they just, I remember them. Because imagine if somebody did this to you.
Absolutely.
They just looked at each other and they were like, absolutely.
Oh, you want to see that?
Go right ahead.
Please do. This will be great.
And then I did the worst monologue because I was all screwed up in my head. Sure. Like, oh no, I should be dancing and singing. Did a horrible monologue for them. And then, because I had like read in an acting book, I said, would you like me to do it another way for you? And they just said, that's okay, Ryan. Thank you for coming by.
Thanks.
What's saddest about it is I waited near my beeper hoping that maybe I'd get a call. I thought there was a chance.
And the saddest part of that statement was you had a beeper.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
We all did, man.
It was $1.99 a month. Yeah, $1.99 a month. But screw you, Disney. You made a mistake.
Look at you now. You're a singing and dancing machine now. I've seen you sing and dance. Yeah. Well, and I think yet that same work ethic or aesthetic is with you today, right? Because on one level, right, you're, and we're very proud of you, and you're doing great stuff, but you're still doing the Groundlings. You come down to Improv Asylum and you do shows. Yeah. You're doing things with Comedy Bang Bang podcasts. Like to me, you're still working out for the things that you're supposed to work out on, so that when you are in the game, be it
you have to. It sounds so cheesy to be like, you have to practice your craft. But the TV and the film world move so fast. The audition, I mean, people say it's like, oh, I was trying to get this movie for months and stuff. But the speck of time that you have to impress a producer or impress a director or go in there and do a good job, you can't say, I want to do it again all the time. You can't say like, oh, I'll see you tomorrow and we'll see if I improved. Most of the time, they judge you in 40 seconds, and then they're either listening to the last minute and a half of your audition, or they're passing on it. Or, I mean, there's stories of people, fast-forwarding through tape just to see if people are like to, you know, you don't have time. So you have to practice your craft all the time. So when you do get that moment, you can be...
You're on and you're ready. And it's similar but different. But, we have auditions, obviously. You've been through that Improv Asylum. And more now, like in the last auditions we had, I've started to saying to people, like, you know, they go through their warm-ups and they do some scenes and they're all hesitant and they're being polite to each other.
Yeah.
And, I'm not the nicest guy in the world or the touchy. I'm not, Ryan.
Neither am I.
And so, like, I've gotten to, like, it's meant to be helpful, even though it's tough love, but it's meant to be. I'm like, you know, they do their first series of scenes and they're all being like, I'm like, okay, everybody, if you're wondering if the audition is on, it's on right now. Now's the time for you to be funny. Now's the time to go.
Yeah.
If you're going to have less than 30 minutes here, you're going to probably have 20 minutes. Like,
don't be shy.
Like, now is the time. And I think so often people are like, well, I don't know. Like, no. You're here to audition.
Go
for your own sake.
Put on gas.
And I tell people that. I'm like, now, if you're wondering, and you can see everybody go like, oh, shit. I'm like, yeah.
Yeah.
What are we all doing here?
Yeah, you got to go.
When did you decide for yourself that you needed to be out in L.A.?
Well, very simply, my father saw me like working in Boston, and he said, do you want to, like, I think they're, came a point where they were like, oh, you want to do, I'd done a few commercials and they were like, do you want to do this, like, for, you want to, as a job, can you do this as a job, is that possible? And I was like, yeah, people are professional actors, they make a lot of money, I think, I don't even know. And he was like, well, find out who you think is, who's funniest to you, and go do what they did. And my father said that to me, and I talked to him about it today, and he's like, I don't even remember saying that. And I was like, I don't care if you remember saying it, you said it to me. So I googled Will Ferrell, and I had never heard of the Groundlings, and I was like, he did the Groundlings, then I will go to LA and I will do the Groundlings, I will do it, and I will win at it.
And the commonality is the same thing. Like when I, you know, before Improv Asylum ever started, and I was just, you know, I was a substitute teacher, and I was a real estate agent. I was doing comedy.
Yeah.
And I remember I was a permanent sub in the Newton school system.
Yeah.
Well, what that meant was you would go in like on Monday, Wednesday, Friday, whether they had a class for you or not.
Yeah.
And I never wanted to be a teacher. I made it clear to everybody I wasn't going to be a teacher. And if Jim was available, always send me to substitute Jim, because everybody else was like, I want to be the English. I'm like, I'll go to Jim. Right. And if you didn't have that, you'd go to the library and you just sit and screw around in the library.
Right.
And you know, I was looking up all same thing, Groundlings, Second City, all of these things. And it was like a article from, I think it was like Boston Magazine, and there was a small little article there, and it talked about how Second City was thinking of opening a place in Boston, and mm-hmm. it had mention of this producer, Kelly Leonard. Mm-hmm. So I was the same way. I'm like, oh, man, if Second City's coming to Boston, I'm going to be a part of this. And there's not even not a chance.
Yeah.
Being 22 and 23, not being very good at anything and having no credits, I thought it would be a good idea to call Second City and ask for the producer.
Love it.
To which I did. To Kelly's, you know, eternal credit.
Yeah.
Kelly took my call.
Oh, wow. I didn't know.
He had nothing to gain. I mean, I couldn't have gotten a job there as a busboy.
Right.
Right? I'm like, well, I've been doing improv for 8 months now. Pretty successfully, right? And so he talked about it and how, you know, and he was very nice. That's and he gave nice. Me some different ideas or whatever. But that call, you know, indirectly led to Chet Harding meeting me in Boston.
Right.
You know, because he was moving to Boston. They're like, well, there's this, I don't know, this thing called Rock Hard Improv. They didn't have websites back
right.
then. You know, and he found his way and we connected and we created that place. But if I didn't have that thing, if you didn't have that thing of like, I'm going to go ignorant where Will Ferrell was.
Drive. Yeah.
You know?
It's just like, it's not, it, people are like, oh, that, is that cockiness? It's not cockiness.
It's
just like, I didn't think I had anything to lose to try that and to be like, I'm going to go to L.A. and why wouldn't I? I don't necessarily I don't think I thought I was going to be a groundling, but each level along the way, I didn't look too far ahead.
Yeah.
I just said, I'm going down this road. I'll see what stops me. And there have been plenty of roads I've gone down and plenty of rooms I've gone in where I've been embarrassed myself like sure. out the window. But you got to be willing to try those things with everything you have. Like, you got to be willing to go, and the audition is now, the audition is on. You got to be willing to step on the gas in those moments.
And you see that thing, you know, sure, you have the big picture, but you see that thing like just above, and you're like, well, I mean, I could do that.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe they won't let me, but
I could
do that. And then when you're at that level, you're like, well, I could.
Yeah.
Go up one more level. And then, and that's how my approach was. And I don't think it is cockiness. For me, it was always like, well, I mean, what other option do I have?
Yes.
I don't know. I mean, I'm going to do this.
Yeah.
I don't, like, it's not cocky. I'm like, I don't know.
It's kind of, I can't do anything else. I can hardly do this. I think I really still to this day kind of think I'm faking. Like, I don't, this isn't a pitiful thing, but I'm like, I think my drive and my willingness to take no and rejection has gotten me further than any talent I have.
For me, no, I mean, no question. It's
yeah.
not even a, and it's not a, oh, fake, you know, self-deprecating.
No,
no.
I'm just like, I've seen plenty of people that I'm like, shit, they are much better than me. Those guys can sing and dance.
Sure.
They'd be great at a Disney audition. And I'm just like, oh, but they're, I can tell they're a little more insecure. They're going to, they might fade before I do.
Mm-hmm.
I'll just keep going.
Yeah. If you don't quit, everybody else quits or dies.
Yeah. And hopefully I won't. Die. Oh, well, I'll die before I quit.
Yeah.
For sure. I'll die before I quit. I love that movie.
The only thing I'll say is, I'll die before I quit. The Ryan Gall story. He died.
Yeah. He died immediately. By
so,
the time you're listening to this, oh, wouldn't that be scary? What if I really do die?
It will be so great for ratings.
Oh, my God. This will go so... Oh. I mean, I'll see what I can do.
Well, we don't want you to die. You know, but I will say, though, that personally it's been, you know... It's so fun to watch everything that you do and to truly reference you and be able to say, hey, look at this guy. He's
awful and he's made it that
if
far.
If that guy can do it.
You know what? I will say this. And I don't know what this is, but I never booked TV for a long time. I booked commercials because I was like, they don't matter to me. And then I somewhere along the line, I go, oh, wait, they don't matter to me. I have to find a way to make TV not matter to me.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a slow process because you can't
sure.
tell yourself something doesn't matter when the stakes are there for you either way. So I came up with this plan that I was going to fake that it didn't matter to me when I went in the room. So I would go in the room and the first thing I do is I clock the trash can in the room and I have my sides with me, my script. So I would do it once and I would see how fast from the moment I finish, I could throw the sides in the trash and walk out of the room and just say bye. And that was a turning point where people would go, hey, where are you going? And I would be like, I gotta I have things to do. I got shit to do. What are you talking about? And I would look, and they would automatically be like, no, come back. And even if I did it horribly, they'd be like, you're in a rut. Slow down. Let's do it again. This is,
great.
And it worked because then I'd get one out of the way. It wouldn't always work. Sometimes they'd be like, see ya. But I'd get at least walk out of there being like, sides and trash. I'm leaving this.
Good, bad, or indifferent. That energy's off you. And it's that thing of when you don't give a shit, you relax and you can do better work. And then the other thing too, and I think you do this very much, and I think I do it now a lot as well. It's like I started to realize, and my setting's a little bit different, but I find myself in a lot of like meetings or corporate meetings, either about what I'm going to do on stage in that world or just business deals or whatever it is. And I found that like the more and more I leaned into like who I was, I was more successful. And like my staff or my team would always be like, hey, Norm, can you dial back? And I was like, definitely I can't. No. I'm like, no. And the more I was like, I don't know, what are we doing here? Like I was famously with our business development guy, I was in a meeting with a bunch of bankers from Ireland. And we sat down and we were in Ireland and it was like this white linen thing in a private room in this bank. And we sat down. And the first thing I said out, and they brought in the food. And the first thing I said in my mouth was like, hey, just so we all know here, I hate bankers. And like Bob was like, what are you doing?
Why would you do it?
Because I hate bankers.
They're traditionally boring, awful people.
And what do they want to do? Like, and so, but you do find the sense of it's got to be, you know, to a degree genuine, right? Yes. It's got to be maybe a version of who you are. But yeah, the more you lean into who the hell you are.
I told you that once. I said, you never want to book a job where you can't be yourself. Yeah. So like, I tell that to my students sometimes. I say like, don't, when you audition, don't try, even if they tell you to do something that isn't you, ignore them. You have to be yourself. Doesn't mean you can't be a character. Doesn't mean you can't play a different character, but you don't want to ever get on set and be like, holy shit, I can't recreate that because that wasn't who I was, or it doesn't feel comfortable. If it's not comfortable, it's not going to come across authentic and you're going to feel like a shithead. And I've done that. I've done like little jobs where I'm like, ugh, I feel gross.
And I think we both come at it from a place of, and we say this because we've done it all wrong many times.
Many.
Like we've done the opposite of what I've said, right?
You know, doing it wrong right now.
Oh my God.
I shouldn't be here. This doesn't feel right. This doesn't feel like me.
No, this is terrible. Ari is just shaking his head in disdain.
This is awful. This will never, I'm going to be dead tomorrow.
We'll wrap this up, but you're rapping today.
I'm done. I'm done with principal photography and we'll be going back to LA tomorrow.
And you start a film project out there.
Starting a film project at the end of this month that should take me through the middle of November. So I feel lucky to do that. I'm doing a few episodes of Superstore in between. So I'm like, I feel lucky to be busy and, you know, come January 1st, hopefully 2019 brings some new fun stuff. And if it doesn't, open calls for Disney all over the place.
Any point you need some corporate work, man.
Yeah.
I'll get you.
You
up.
Know I would.
I know you have. Yeah, you I actually have. You did the Martha's Vineyard Nursing Association.
That's right. Yeah. I would do
it.
Like, I have no problem. I love that's. Yeah, I like going back.
We're fortunate to do whatever we do. Well, again, we're super proud of you. Thank you for taking the time here to do this and blah, 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 hey, niceties. And
if you have any shows I can do and make a few bucks, give me a call.
I got an entire theater in New York that's at your school. That's Beyond the Norm. We'll talk to you later. Thanks.